Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to our show. It's Thursday. Sure, happy it's Thursday. Getting to the end of the week here. A lot of crazy stuff going on there. The economy continues to dominate the news. We're going to get into that in just a little minute. But first of all, a friendly reminder. Our call-in number is 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231. Donovan is in the control room twiddling the dials and answering the phones. So when you call in, say hi to Donovan because he's overworked and underpaid and he needs all the cheerfulness that he can get. Now, turning to the news here, somebody actually sent me this little rhyme. It says, government experts sitting on a fence trying to make a dollar out of 16 cents. I think we're going to put that one on a T-shirt. And it does seem like that's what's going on here. And it may well be that our government and our corporate culture are filled with lawyers and accountants. And so the only solutions they can think of are bookkeeping tricks to move the debt around or creating new laws just because that's all they know how to do. There used to be something called the law of the hammer, which states that if you give a small child a hammer, all of a sudden everything they encounter requires pounding. And I guess if you give that small child a law degree, everything they encounter needs a new law to be applied to it, which is why we have such a rat's nest legal system here, which I guess the rats are very comfortable in it. We've already got a caller on the line, and let's just go right to Jeff from North Carolina, and you want to talk about recovery.gov.
Yeah, I was notified by a local news channel that you could go on recovery.gov and see some of the transparency between the bill and what it's doing. My question was, why do you have to register to see anything?
Well, that's a very good question, and I would say the most benign explanation is they're building a mailing list of people who've logged in here in order to contact either for campaign donations or for some other form of outreach. But I understand in this day and age, a lot of people are very concerned about anything that requires an online registration. And yeah, being part that it's, I assume that this is being paid for by our tax dollars. You know, I mean, looking at the website right now, it says there's a privacy policy and so forth and so on. But I think it's a sign of our times that we as a people are so distrustful of the government that has provably lied us into a couple of wars and has so far been less than 100% transparent about what they're doing with all the money. And I think this website is not going to assuage anybody's concerns that we are.
I mean, you go on there, you click the video of Obama talking about this completely transparent, yet you click any links and you're required. There should be, you know, I've seen several sites where, all right, I don't want to register, but view the site, view the information.
Yeah.
That's the way it should be set up.
I would agree with you, and I'm going to say that probably what it is they're collecting names primarily so that somewhere down the road there will be an outreach either for the reelection campaign or who knows what all else. But I understand your frustration, and I agree. It should be completely open and transparent. People should be able to log in anonymously and look at that data because, after all, it's our money.
Yeah, and after all, it's supposed to be transparent.
Yes, it is. Anyway, Jeff, thanks an awful lot for the phone call. I absolutely agree with you. You should be able to look at that information without having to log in, and maybe somebody from Obama's administration is peeking in on the show, and they will implement that. So thanks an awful lot for the call. All right. The webcam is in operation. We finally got the bugs out of that. The chat room at whatreallyhappened.com is in operation, and I'm looking at people who are in there typing about the start of the radio show. So if you want to go on in, if you don't want to do a phone call, you can log into the chat room and send me messages there. Or you can email the website, and I'm looking at the mailbox as well. Now, Alan Greenspan, and it's very interesting if you study this man's writings, because he started out as an outspoken supporter of a gold-backed currency system when he was very young and in college. Then all of a sudden, when he became chairman of the Federal Reserve, complete 180 degree. The Federal Reserve was just the most wonderful system ever invented. Now that he's no longer part of the Federal Reserve, he's going back to his original roots and pointing out the serious weaknesses of the system. And he's basically come out and said on Tuesday that our current recession is going to be the worst since the 1930s. And I think we're already there. And I think the big question is, are we going to push past the Great Depression? Will it be more severe than even that horrible depression? There's no ironclad rule that says that has to be the worst one in our history. And I think certainly the potential and certainly the very bad directions that we're seeing in our current fiscal policy could easily get worse. And, you know, I've noticed this T-shirt that we sell around here saying "Eat the Rich." All of a sudden, that slogan is beginning to show up a lot of places in graffiti and stuff. And you know, it's a little kind of a dark humor, but I think it indicates the severity of people's concerns. I mean, right now we have got 5 million Americans are on unemployment benefits. We have millions more Americans who have simply run out of their unemployment benefits. They're not even counted as unemployed anymore. We have millions and millions of Americans who have lost their high-paying jobs and they've had to take lower-paying jobs. They're counted as employed by the government. And we have people who used to work full-time. They're working part-time. They're considered employed by the U.S. government. So the unemployment problem is really a lot more serious than the numbers that they're putting out there would indicate. Food banks across the country are reporting, you know, just a surge in people coming in, maybe not every single day, but just people who are right on the edge. They're having to go down there one day a week and say, we just need a few free groceries just to make up, you know, enough to get us through the week. You know, and we're buying most of our groceries, but we just need a little more, you know, because of all the kids and stuff like that. So that is another indicator that things are going bad. And not to in any way cast aspersions upon our audience and our readership at what really happened, but I've noticed over the last several weeks a major, major surge in our readership, in the letters coming into the website, listenership to the show. And I'm glad that you are here, but I also understand from a lot of the emails I'm getting that a lot of you listening to the show are available to listen to this show right now because you too have lost your employment and your circumstance. And I'm glad you're here, you know, listening to us, and I'm glad you're here getting angry with us about what's going on. But on the other hand, I truthfully would be just as happy if you had your jobs back again and weren't listening to the show. So it's kind of a mixed thing because as a radio host, I want to have the largest possible audience, but certainly not at such a huge, huge price to the individual audience members. Now, John Williams, the accountant, and I say that to differentiate from John Williams, the composer, but John Williams, the economist expert, basically has come out today and said some things that I've been saying actually going back for almost 10 years now. The direct quote from him is, the federal government is bankrupt. If the federal government were a corporation, the president and senior treasury officers would be in a federal penitentiary. And that's absolutely correct. And the reason is, what Williams is pointing out today, and he's getting quoted in the mainstream media when he says it, is basically saying that, you know, the public has to realize the government is bankrupt. No taxes are being held in reserve to pay for the future of Social Security and Medicare benefits. Now, back in the 1990s, when Bill Clinton was creating this huge so-called budget surplus, I pointed out that what he was doing is he was grabbing the Social Security cash buildup for the baby boomers, and he was spending it as general funds, and he was putting all of these IOUs in the Social Security Trust Fund, basically, you know, treasury bills, saying that we will reimburse this money somewhere down the road. This, when the economy was supposed to be in boom time. The economy was great, and Clinton was still having to borrow from the Social Security Trust Fund. Now, common sense is going to tell you that if you're having to borrow when times are good, when times are supposedly their best, when are you going to see a circumstance where you can pay that money back? And that was really the trap. And Social Security is mostly full of IOUs. A lot of other federal trust funds have been looted in the same way. And the government really is broke, and the public has got to wake up and realize that. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors, 800-259-9231.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Well, search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're talking about the economy here. We've got Mark waiting on the phone. And Mark, we're going to get to you in a minute, but I kind of wanted to finish up what I started in the last segment. Starting in the Clinton years and continuing also through the Bush years, the administration has been dipping into the cash set aside in Social Security. What do I mean by the cash set aside? Okay. We all know about the baby boomers. I'm part of that generation. The surge in population that occurred at the end of World War II, when everybody came home and started having babies and living the American dream, and it was a wonderful time. But we've had this spike in the age distribution graph of our population that's been, you know, moving closer and closer to retirement age. And it was known many, many, many years ago that Social Security was going to have a dramatic increase in claims right about now, as the baby boomers hit the retirement age. And so starting back in the late 1980s, Social Security taxes were increased. And the extra money, the surplus that was not being spent on the immediate benefits, was allowed to build up in the Social Security Trust Fund so that there'd be this big lump of cash ready to handle this surge in claims that would be starting right about now. Well, unfortunately, all that money just sitting there, I guess, proved to be too much of a temptation, because during the Clinton administration, they basically started grabbing chunks of that money and moving it into the general funds and spending it as general funds for the federal government. And this is the reason why Clinton, alone of all the presidents, you know, for most of this last century, in fact, had a huge budget surplus at the end of his time. It wasn't really tax revenues and good, you know, fiscal control. He had looted the pension funds of Americans in the Social Security Trust Fund. And they had that huge chunk of money in there and said, what should we do? Well, we should fix Social Security, meaning let's put it back in there. But in the end, people just started grabbing for their favorite pork barrel projects. This trend was continued into the Bush administration, where they were taking this extra money out of Social Security to cover federal reckless spending, what they weren't borrowing from the Federal Reserve, they got from Social Security. So now here we are, the baby boomers are getting ready to retire, and all that's in Social Security right now are these T-bills, IOU notes. And in order for the baby boomers to get the benefits for which they have been paying into the system their entire lives, either somebody's going to have to pay higher taxes to replace all that money, or the benefits will be cut, probably a combination of both. But the bottom line is, you know, we have so many elderly, about to retire people in this country that support the government for no other reason because they've reached the age where they expect the government to take care of them. And it ain't going to happen, people. It is not going to happen. Social Security is out of money. They don't have the money to cover the baby boomer retirements. They're running out of money for all the medical programs. This is why all of a sudden there's this big push for death with dignity. In other words, when you run out of your own money, they're going to stick the needle in you and you're gone. And they'll say, ah, that wonderful American, they died with dignity right when it was fiscally prudent for them to do so. And, you know, that's where we are right now. The federal government is broke. And if they start taking on these toxic assets and these assets continue to decline, then the U.S. government is on the edge of default. All right, we're going to go to the phones. We've got Mark in Texas. Aloha, Mark. Welcome to the show. What is on your mind today?
Hi. You touched on Greenspan's affinity for a gold-backed standard when he was a college student, and then, of course, he divorced himself from that rather completely and rather totally. And as the chairman of the Federal Reserve, he did more than divorce himself from that. He worked very, very, very hard at creating the conditions that, of course, we live in right now. Most people sadly don't understand them. he is a moral, morally depraved individual who is about as much a criminal as a person can possibly be, given his, quote, white-collar status. And he should be positively ashamed of himself, and it's always been remarkable to me how a man like that, among many others in his ilk, could actually stare in themselves, stare the reflection of themselves in the mirror every morning. But it also occurred to me rather late in life that these men are, well, patently evil, by nature, and have absolutely no scruples whatsoever. They would never look at something like the Federal Reserve System and the fiat currency system, especially in America, being American, and give it any credence whatsoever except that which would drive the country into bankruptcy, which, frankly, you touched on Social Security. Michael, you and I both know, or should, rather, you and I will never receive a dime of it. And there is no money there, and very soon there will be no money for recipients of so-called Social Security in the foreseeable years ahead. It's bankrupt. The country's bankrupt. We can never possibly pay back the many trillions of dollars in obligations, unfunded and otherwise, that are mandated by the government. It's not going to happen. It's just simply humanly impossible, especially.
That's absolutely correct.
Yeah, there's no way. We've lost over three-quarters of our manufacturing capability and capacity, and those places are rust buckets now. Those facilities are either gone, bulldozed, or indeed just standing rust buckets. And I had someone tell me something very interesting a year ago. It's worth an awful lot of money. And believes, as many I'm sure do, that America's technology and ability to innovate will be quite enough. No, that will not be quite enough.
Well, I'm going to disagree with you here because I think America's ability to innovate and create would be enough to revive manufacturing if we were to have, say, a Manhattan Project-like effort to develop the next generation of something where all of a sudden America has products to sell that nobody else in the world knows how to make. That would bring the money.
I would agree with you, and you're quite correct. I meant to imply that what this person was suggesting, though, however, was that Americans didn't need to manufacture. And I think there's probably a pretty substantial group of folks. And this gentleman was a very bright guy, not stupid, very well educated, enjoyed the benefits of America's the promise. The American dream, whoever created that, has to be one of these cadre of Greenspan folks. But nonetheless, the American promise, hard work and ingenuity and education would give somebody the opportunity at developing and building and accumulating wealth. And here's a guy who has been able to do that. And like many others like him, I'm just sure of it, coming out of the tech sector, technology sector, actually believes that you can have the, quote, technology component of it as American, and yet without manufacturing, we don't need it. And that's, I think that is absolutely, completely 180 degrees out of phase with reality. You cannot
I would agree with you. I would agree with you. The music means we got to stop here. Joe, thanks an awful lot for the phone call. We have to let you go here. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with, I'm sorry, that was Mark. Goodbye. We'll be back with Joe after the break.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. Boy, a lot of calls, a lot of mail, a lot of stuff in the chat room. We're going to try and get to all of it. Right now, we're going to go to the phones. Joe in New York. Aloha, Joe. Welcome to the show. What is on your mind today?
Hey, Michael. I just want to say you're the man, and keep up the good work. You're the best site and the best show.
I'll do my best. Thank you.
You're welcome. It's doing a great job. With that said, I wanted to get your take on the, I'm sure you saw it, I saw it on your website, was the Rick Santelli, the CNBC clip from this morning with the Tea Party. I think tea bags are being sold all over the place, probably in Chicago mostly, right, as we speak. But the thing that was great about it, it was on the mainstream media that, you know, at least you had one guy out of all those jokers on TV that spoke the truth. And it takes people, and they go to YouTube, and they look, and they read the comments, and they start to wake up a little bit more. And that's why, you know, you're getting an infusion of hits. And, you know, I think little by little, I mean, people are still asleep, believe it or not, but they're waking up a lot more than ever before. And I think, you know, guys like you and RBN and Alex and all these guys, little by little, you know, you guys don't, like, you're the only one guy, I would say, talk about everything. These guys talk about different things, but all together, pieces are coming together. You know where I'm going with that. I know where you're going with that,
and I would agree with you. People are waking up. They've had so much fraud and fakery thrown at them by the corporate media, by the government, by the corporate culture, and they'd like to be comfortable and just go along thinking that life and the country is what they were taught it was supposed to be, but they're having to confront that reality. And you just walk around your own neighborhoods. I mean, yesterday we saw this homeless guy in front of our supermarket. And, you know, it's just heartbreaking because you watch this guy in there, but for the grace of God, go I. And, you know, we got him a sandwich and a drink and everything. And, you know, but there are so many of them. And you're thinking, where is the government that has taken so much money from us over the years? I mean, this is the time of year when you're doing your taxes. Get out your tax records for the last 10 years and look how much money you have given the government and ask yourself, you know, did they make your life better? Because that's what we pay taxes for. We pay taxes for our government to make our lives better. And I'm glad you brought this up because one of the comments I wanted to make here, Barack Obama, and the reason for the video this morning and why it's hitting such a resonance, Obama is not giving the American people what the American people want. We don't want to patch. We don't want to fix. We don't want to stop a house fire by chopping wood out of the neighbor's houses and throwing it onto the pile. We don't want the mortgage payments of struggling homeowners socialized so that we're all paying these inflated mortgage interest rates collectively. What we want is what we had before. We want the lives that we built for ourselves out of hard work and dedication and bettering ourselves and which got taken away from us over the last 8 years by sheer stupidity by the U.S. government, by giving tax credits to corporations to send high-paying jobs to other countries, which collapsed the bottom of our entire economy at a time when we're struggling to deal with all the debt. And so what's their solution when all of a sudden the economy starts, you know, grinding to a halt? We're going to take $1 trillion away from the American people and we're going to give it to the banks so the banks can loan it back to the American people at interest. That's not a solution. From the bank's point of view, it is, I'm sure. But they're all saying about a credit crunch. There's no credit crunch. They're out there ready to loan you money. Nobody wants to borrow because unlike the government, we, the American people, understand we're not sure we can pay it back. And so we're not going to take that loan out. We don't have populations of people that we can shackle to that debt. We can't print up the money out of thin air the way the Federal Reserve does. We're kind of stuck on the short end of this deal. And we are reacting, for the most part, like responsible, mature American citizens. I know the media is trying to, like, say, oh, we were all irresponsible because we went out and we bought homes that we couldn't afford. That's not entirely true. At the time we bought them, we could afford them, and we were making the payments, and we were making the payments on our credit cards. But when the U.S. government, when the Bush administration gave these tax credits to make it easy for corporations to ship manufacturing out of the country, there went the livelihood for much of the working class of America. And this previous caller who was saying there's this corporate culture idea that we can invent things and have them manufactured in other countries and bring them back here to sell, that really is very much a blind attitude. Because if you're the only one who's doing it, yeah, you make a lot more money doing that. But if everybody's doing it, everything grinds to a halt because your employees are your customers. If you're firing your employees, you are firing your customers. And the first few corporations who did this, yeah, they made out like bandits and their stockholders were very, very happy. But when everybody starts to do it and all of a sudden the retail sales slump and the retail outlets are closing and product can't move, They begin to realize that maybe Adam Smith wasn't as smart as a lot of people wanted to think he was. That keeping a global awareness of the economy, of the health of the economy as a whole, was the responsibility, the moral and social responsibility of our CEOs. And on that regard, they have utterly failed us.
Yep. Wanted to say one thing, Mike, can I?
Please do. Go for it.
Okay. Now, you know, we're all talking, we know the problems exist. The resolution.
Yes.
Your resolution that I read daily is, you know, cut the taxes in half and, you know, that'll light up the Christmas tree.
Mm-hmm.
The only other two solutions that I see out there other than yours, which I think is a good one,
mm-hmm.
is one, I can't see any other solution than they got to courage to scrap the system. And the other one is probably the easy one. If they would have started in the inception, if you add up all this bailout money that we had to pay, if they would have paid everybody's mortgage off, you know what? It would have infused the banks,
yep.
and that would have resolved a lot of the problems, even though we had to pay this debt back, but at least we'd be at where we are now, but with everybody having no debt, pretty much.
Yep. That's absolutely correct. Now, the reason I go the 50% tax cut is because it is a move that would at least allow the government to continue as it is today. These other things about crashing the whole system, basically we're talking about scrapping the whole government, the whole financial system, getting rid of the Federal Reserve, and starting over from scratch. It's going to be a little bit more difficult and a little bit more uncomfortable to get through. The bottom line here, as far as paying off all the mortgage, yeah, that would have made a lot of sense. And a lot of commentators are saying the reason all these bailouts aren't working is the wrong people are getting the money. They're taking the money away from the people who most need it to drop on these corporations. And we had a comment on the chat board come in talking about General Motors, and that's a perfectly good example of this runaway bailout mentality. We've already given them $16 billion. To keep jobs intact, now they're letting thousands of people go. They're closing five factories. If you add up all the money and you look at how many cars they're actually manufacturing, basically the taxpayers are giving General Motors $20,000 for every car they are building this year. That's more than General Motors spends to actually make the car, by the way. And, you know, General Motors has 140,000 workers in the United States. They're laying off 40,000. So they're asking for another $16 billion to keep 93,000 workers. That works out to $172,000 per worker. We're being ripped off. They don't need that much money to keep those workers.
Well, that's why it tells me, I mean, like, the last scenario that needed to pay everybody's mortgage, and I forgot to mention, would have probably gotten rid of a lot of this county party exposure by what all these derivatives,
mm-hmm.
is it tells me it's all by design, because instead of doing something logical, they keep doing the illogical, and people are just too stupid to see it. But I think they're starting to come around, like I had discussed in the beginning of the discussion. Mike, listen,
yeah.
I want to leave you at that, because I don't want to take up your time. You're always a pleasure to talk to, and have a good show.
Well, thanks an awful lot, Joe. Thanks for the call. We're coming down to the end of the segment here. But real quick, everyone talks about all this huge debt and the derivatives and everything, and you have to remember, it's imaginary. It never existed. The critical flaw, the fatal flaw to the Federal Reserve System is that the instant it went into operation, more money is owed than is actually in existence. As long as they could find new suckers to come in and take out more loans, they could print up the new money to pay the old debts off. When they can't find new borrowers, the pyramid collapses, and that's what's happening right now. They're talking about trillions of dollars of derivatives exposure. This is all gambling debt. It's not like somebody really put gold out of their pocket on the table and said, take it and pay it back. It's number games. They've gamed the system, and they don't want to give up that advantage. We'll be back after these words.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Americans who own guns, people like you and me, prevent over 1 million violent crimes every year. Get the facts on gun control. Visit armedandsecure.org. That's armedandsecure.org.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the last segment of our show today. A lot of calls, a lot of chat messages, a lot of email here. Susan from Arizona called in briefly and left a message to remind me to mention that Israeli tanks entered Gaza City earlier today. We did actually run this story on whatreallyhappened.com where tanks and helicopters crossed the border and entered Gaza City. There was a brief clash with the Palestinian fighters. And apparently Israel decided it wasn't worth pushing this, especially with American attention on Gaza. And my last report is that the Israeli forces have left to the other side of the border. At this time, I don't think they're still in there, but obviously sometimes we don't always get the most accurate information out of there. We're going to go back to the phones. We've got Jorge in Texas. Aloha, Jorge. Welcome to the show. What is on your mind today?
I'm calling because I heard one of your earlier conversations about a technology that could help this country out, and what we, you know, how we need to get back to making things, and that will help our economy get back into a competitive stance rather than being a, you know, debtor economy. Well, there's one that I just recently heard about, and it's called the MYT engine. And when I saw this, it changed my view, and this owner, he has it patented, and he specifically wants to manufacture this engine. It's an internal combustion engine. He specifically wants to manufacture it in America to help our economy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wish him a lot of luck, and you know, we should be getting support for this kind of endeavor from all of these bailout packages. I mean, if you go through this this latest stimulus plan of Barack Obama's, it's money to, you know, build a new computer system for Social Security and refurbish this government office and refurbish this roads and stuff, none of which makes us a more productive manufacturing economy. And new technology development is getting short shrift. They're talking about cutting NASA's budget even further. NASA used to be a real technology incubator for even non-spaceflight related technologies coming out.
That's funny that you mentioned that, because he actually won a NASA Innovative Technology Competition in 2005.
I wish him a lot of luck.
It's the MYT engine, if any of your listeners want to look it up.
I'm looking at it right now on Google. It looks interesting, and I will definitely look into it a little bit further. You know, but that's one. We need to move the entire country forward into a whole new realm of technology, whether it's photonics, which is the next great revolution in computing circuitry, is get away from the electrons, get away from the heat, get away from all of the electromagnetic effects, start doing our computation with light photons. That would revolutionize computers, would bring about a revolution in robotics. If we can get there ahead of anybody else, then the money is going to flow to us. If we just sit here and remind ourselves of how great we were back in the 1960s, China will beat us to it. China's already beat us to fusion. And Japan is far ahead of us in computer design and robotics. You know, if we don't make that leap forward to leapfrog them, we can never catch up. We can spend the rest of our lives trying to play catch up with them.
Yeah, and I'm a mechanic type, and this is right up, I think, America's alley as far as the Industrial Revolution goes, and it's along the same lines. I mean, it's not high tech like cutting edge electronics, but it will revolutionize our, I guess you would call it our economy, because it's so ingenious, I think.
I'll take a look at it. All right. Thanks an awful lot for the call, Jorge. We're going to let you go here and see if we can cover our last few stories here. And, oh, my goodness, there's just so much going on here. The Allen Stanford probe is continuing to just basically, oh, man, it's here's his situation. Let me back up, take a breath, and give you the overview. The confession by Bernie Madoff that he had engaged in a $50 billion pyramid scheme. And I emphasize confession because nobody detected it except this Harry Markopoulos, and he'd gone over to SEC, and SEC said, nope, we don't see it, and we don't hear it, and you can't make us. So Bernie confesses on TV, and all of a sudden, ooh, there's been some financial skullduggery going on at the highest levels of our economic infrastructure. And the SEC was properly chastised by Congress, and they're starting to dig into these things. And now they're finding this Alan Stanford, who's a Texas billionaire. He's got banks all over South America. There's been runs on them. Venezuela has seized one of his banks now. They can't find Stanford himself. But it's shaping up that he also had billions and billions of dollars of fraudulent schemes going out there. I am ashamed to admit they have uncovered one here in Hawaii. A Sharpster operator that used a company called Billions Coupons. I think his name was Cooper, Robert Cooper, something like that. Oh, here it is, Marvin Cooper. Hawaii-based Billions Coupons and its CEO, Marvin Cooper. And this guy was specifically targeting hearing-impaired investors. He was getting these get-togethers, and he'd put up slides and presentations and visuals to invest, to encourage these people to invest in whatever it was he was doing that was going to be for the benefit of hearing-challenged people. And he just ripped these people off. And we have not seen the end of this. We have not seen the end of this. It's been going on for decades. Your government that takes your taxes, in theory, to make your life better, let it happen. They have allowed this to happen. We know that a lot of these operators, you know, are regular political contributors. In fact, yesterday, CBS ran a story basically pointing out that Alan Stanford had been donating to this Democratic candidate and that Democratic candidate, and, ooh, he's a really, really bad person. Well, it turns out that when you go back and you look at all of the records of his donations, that like any sharp operator, Alan Stanford was donating to both parties more or less equally. Because that's how you bypass the election of the people. You buy both candidates. Sometimes I think the two-party system was brought into existence to save money by the corporations. Because in the early days when we had 5 and 10 and 20 parties, you had to buy 5 and 10 and 20 candidates. That's a lot of money. But if you come up with this two-party system, that limits how much money you've got to spend to subvert the will of the voters, which is exactly what's going on. If I own a corporation and there's a Republican and a Democrat running for office, and if I give money to both of them, it doesn't matter what the people vote for anymore. I will own that politician, and they will do what I say. Somebody wrote in this wonderful little article that said that we should, and maybe we'll do this after the revolution, that all politicians, we should dress them like NASCAR drivers. We give them a really nice flame retardant suit, and on it we sew the patches of all their corporate donors. So when they're out there speechifying about how wonderful this or that bill is going to be that takes so many trillions of dollars from the American people and gives it to all these corporate CEOs, we'll see right on their little jumpsuit just who it is they're really working for, because they're not working for us. I think Reagan actually said it was one of the few things I agreed with him on. He said, a government that is big enough to give you everything you want is big enough to take everything you have. And that is where we are. That is where we are. The government is taking from the poor to give to the rich. And why are you not furious about it? You should be. For your own mental health and self-respect, you've got to get mad. It's like Patricia, who called in the other day, and she says, I feel ashamed, I'm homeless. I said, don't feel ashamed. It's not your fault. You didn't do anything wrong. It was done to you. Don't be ashamed. Don't be embarrassed. Be angry. Angry will get you through. Anger is the appropriate response here. I know our whole culture, we're hearing all this thing about hate is bad, and hate should never hate. Hate is a bad thing. That's nonsense. Hate is a survival mechanism. Now, it's not appropriate to hate whole classes of people based on stereotypes and generalizations, but it is perfectly appropriate to hate individuals and institutions that do hateful things. I hate liars, and I'm not ashamed to say it. I hate cheats. I hate child molesters. I'm not ashamed to say that either. Those are perfectly appropriate forms of hate, and that hate can very often power you to do what has to be done to make a better world. One of those now-dead philosophers, I forget his name, but he said, nothing great is accomplished without passion. And if we're going to change the world, Now's the time to become passionate. That's the end of our show today. The music means it's time to unplug all of this equipment, take a few deep breaths, and go on about my business for the day and your business for the day. We'll be back tomorrow, Friday, end of the week, wrap up, more phone calls. Thanks to everybody who called in. You really do make a much, much better show. So thank you, and until tomorrow, aloha, America.